I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. The Pennsylvania Senate is holding hearings this week on efforts to privatize liquor sales in the state, a perennial issue that's supported by Governor Tom Corbett. He also wants to privatize the lottery, but ran into objections from the new Attorney General Kathleen Kane, who rejected Corbett's plan, saying that's the legislature's responsibility. Congresswoman Allison Schwartz and a bunch of Democrats have announced plans to run for governor challenging Corbett in 2014. Meanwhile, eight people at the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission have been indicted by a grand jury and charged with various counts of pay-to-play. And Senator Pat Toomey's efforts to broker a gun deal in D.C. could haunt him when he runs for a re-election, or could make him an appealing candidate to moderates, including suburban women living near Philadelphia. We're here to talk about all of this is John Micek and John Baer. John Micek is opinion editor of Penn Live and the Harrisburg Patriot News. And John Micek, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Also with us, as I said, John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. And John Baer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. And don't forget that brand new, shiny, bright, and wonderful website, phillydailynews.com, is now up and available to your listeners.
phillydailynews.com. I will do that. I also, we don't have the greatest phone lines here, so we're going to try to fix them, certainly with you, John Baer, but let me go to you, John Micek. And I do want to begin with Pat Toomey, and just curious about how you think his support for background checks on gun sales might play out when he runs for re-election, which, of course, is a couple of years away.
Yeah, well, if you're looking for sort of a reliable barometer of it, the weekend after the vote, the Pennsylvania equivalent of CPAC was meeting here in suburban Harrisburg, the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. These are, this is the conservative grassroots, the most hardcore sort of Republican believers, and they were already handing out buttons, heaping scorn on Toomey and calling for his defeat in his reelection. So, I mean, there's considerable anger among some segments of the Republican base, and that's something that Senator Toomey is going to have to deal with, and his explanations of why he went after the bill and why he didn't think it infringed on the rights of lawful gun owners weren't being bought into by this very vocal constituency. What he has to do and what he's saying he's going to do is get back to his wheelhouse issues of taxes and fiscal responsibility and that kind of thing, and hope that mollifies these folks who are kind of honked off at the moment.
Well, and John,
that said, his public... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, interesting use of words there. But I had mentioned in my intro the suburban female voters who have been in past elections leaning a little bit more conservative, a little bit more Republican. Do you think they could play a decisive role? And I realize we're looking into our crystal ball here.
That's a key constituency. And there's a Quinnipiac poll that came out last week that actually gave Senator Toomey something of a polling bounce overall among all state voters on this issue. So, that could sort of level things out for him, particularly in the suburbs.
John Baer, let me see if I have you on a better phone line. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. We began by talking about Pat Toomey and his support with Joe Manchin on background checks for guns. Interestingly, Joe Manchin hasn't given up on this issue. He's going to reintroduce it in the Senate in Washington. I was asking John Micek how you think this is going to play out for Pat Toomey. What do you think, John?
Well, I think it's fine for Pat Toomey. I mean, as John mentioned, the Q poll, the Quinnipiac poll out last week shows him at his highest approval rating since he's taken office. And a key thing for him is that the next time he faces voters is 2016 in a presidential year. In a presidential year, you get a lot of turnout in the Southeast where live those suburban Republican women that
right.
you referred to and a lot of other women as well. So I don't see this hurting to me. In fact, it's a real advantage for him in a presidential election.
You had written about Daryl Metcalf introducing a bill that I guess any federal gun law that was passed would not be enforceable in Pennsylvania. John Baer, can you expand on that?
A cleverly named bill, Marty. The House bill number is 357, as in the Magnum caliber.
I got it.
And it would criminalize any attempt by a federal or state official to enforce any laws that would restrict or ban a firearm or limit the size of a magazine of a firearm. It would become a third-degree felony to do that, with up to a year to seven in prison and a fine of $15,000 or both. The interesting thing to me is the bill carries 70 bipartisan co-sponsors, including people in the House who set the agenda, House Speaker Sam Smith, a Republican from beautiful Punxsutawney, and Majority Leader Mike Terzai, a Republican from Allegheny County. So that's Pennsylvania's response so far to the gun issue.
And how do you think, assuming it passes the House, how do you think it'll fare in the Senate?
I've talked to a couple of law professors who said, look, this is basically law that was settled back at Appomattox at the end of the Civil War, that essentially says that states cannot prevent the federal government from enforcing federal law. So it might be more a show of muscle than any sort of mental agility. It's more of a in-your-face kind of pro-gun bill than, I think, any serious attempt to change state and federal law.
John Micek, I heard you chuckle there.
It's funny hearing you know, the state officials talking about wanting to preempt city laws all the time, that they have authority to preempt local ordinances on guns. So the idea that, you know, Mr. Metcalf can just sort of unilaterally step up and say, we're not going to allow the feds to enforce laws. You've only seen preemption doctrine applies to federal law as it does to state law. But, I mean, this, in essence, is sort of the central Pennsylvania viewpoint. I've written a couple of columns about the Toomey matter, and almost every time I do, somebody inevitably writes back with the clause from the state constitution underlined and in boldface, shall not be infringed. And so, I mean, this very passionate and deeply held belief about guns.
And John Micek, Pennsylvania is often described as a gun-supporting state. From your reporting, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a deep tradition of hunting in this state. As John and I can attest, every Monday after Thanksgiving, Harrisburg empties out with people filling the woods for the start of deer hunting season. I mean, it's a deeply held tradition. And you look at the way the whole, you know, clutch their guns and Bibles thing played out in 2008, and you know that explains it as much as anything else.
What do you think, John Bear?
Yeah, no question, Marty. We have that tradition. That's part of our heritage. It's the reason that Guns and Ammo magazine, which proclaims itself to be the world's most widely read firearms magazine, rates Pennsylvania more gun-friendly in a whole variety of measurements than any state in the Northeast, including our neighbors Ohio and West Virginia.
So just to I think sometimes people living in and around the Philadelphia area might not know that about Pennsylvania. John Bear, though, let me ask you about Attorney General Kathleen Kain, because one of the first things she did when she took office was to close the Florida loophole.
Yeah, a long-debated loophole that allows some reciprocity. In other words, people who might not be able to get a permit to carry in Pennsylvania could, under the Florida law, get one and then use it in Pennsylvania because of reciprocity. Kathleen Kain put an end to that. That's long been a source of debate among the gun and pro-gun and gun control advocates. Very smart of her to do that for her base. Right after taking office, and kind of a ballsy step in Pennsylvania. And she did it at the right time, I mean, literally at the height of her political popularity. So, I mean, I don't see that being any sort of long-term damage for her politically. And actually, in terms of law enforcement, in terms of public safety, in terms of common sense, it was the right decision to make.
And John Micek, she's been in office a couple of months. How would you say she is doing?
Yeah, it's funny. When you talked to Mrs. Kain on the campaign trail, she said she didn't want to be an activist attorney general. She wanted to be sort of the 68th district attorney, as the office is so often referred to. But between that and the lottery, her ruling on the lottery contract, kicking it back to the administration, she's coming off as very much a sort of an activist attorney general. She set a very aggressive tone for that office, and seems to be wielding it in a way that it has not been traditionally traditionally wielded, much more of a bully pulpit. And John is correct. I mean, this is something that plays tremendously well to the Democratic base.
How does the governor feel about it, though, John Baer?
I imagine he's not amused on so far anything. I mean, the governor is a big gun supporter, and of course, it's his effort to privatize management of the state lottery that she sort of threw back in her face. And we're not over yet. I mean, the issue of the controversial voter ID bill is headed to court in July. Kathleen Kane, as the state's attorney general, could be the person to defend the law after opposing it as a candidate, or, as I suspect will happen, she can invoke, the Attorney General's Act and kick it back to Corbett and basically say, hey, look, this is your idea. You go ahead and defend it, which, again, would be a politically strong a strong suit to play to her base.
I mentioned in my intro the fact that she did reject Corbett's plan to privatize the lottery. John Baer, on what grounds?
Largely constitutional. The only way that the sort of parameters of the contract that Corbett proposed could be met would be through a substantial expansion of the lottery, and a lot of people think into Keno and maybe new elements. The law establishing the lottery and gaming throughout the state seems to suggest that only the legislature can do that. So relying on the Constitution, the Attorney General kicked it back. Governor's office has said they will tweak their proposal and try again. We haven't heard anything, and the background buzz on that, Marty, is that they are waiting for a new Supreme Court justice to be nominated and confirmed by the Senate. Presumably it would be a Republican, and then that would give the Supreme Court a 4-3 Republican-Democratic edge. Again, assuming that whatever happens to this lottery contract, it's going to be appealed the whole way to the Supreme Court.
And about a minute before our first break here, John Micek, there are so many things to talk about, including the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Can you give us a 45-second description of what's been going on there?
Short form is that Republican Joan Ori Melvin was convicted earlier this year on public corruption charges. She's set to be sentenced on May 7th. The expectation is jail time. Governor Tom Corbett has to nominate a replacement. That is becoming contentious with Senator Dalen Leach from Montgomery County, offering up a list of candidates that he says will be the only politically acceptable ones, and the administration none too pleased about that. Senator Leach is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, so it could get a little bumpy in there.
Well, we're going to take that very short break and then get back to our conversation, talking with John Micek and John Baer, catching up on a whole bunch of Pennsylvania politics issues. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And again, John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. John Micek, opinion editor of Penn Live and the Harrisburg Patriot News. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, It's My Party, the Women in Comedy Project, a world premiere comedy written and directed by Jennifer Childs. Featuring an eclectic cast of Philadelphia actresses, It's My Party, the Women and Comedy Project dives into the many roles comedy plays in women's lives, exploring and exposing the real comedy of everyday life. Tickets and information at 1812productions.org.
I'm Marty Moscowen with some facts and figures about the on-air membership campaigns here at WHYY. We do them 3 times a year. That's about 1% of our total broadcasting time. And we do this to raise a bit more than half of the funds we need to pay for the programs that you enjoy. We ask you to decide the value of this news and information service and then to make a phone call at 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. And what do you get for your pledge of support? support. The knowledge that your investment is returned to you every day when you turn on your radio or log on to our websites. We're talking about in-depth news and analysis, lively conversation, some humor, and many ways to be connected to us. That includes Radio Times, Morning Edition, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, to name just a few of the programs. Today on the show, a roundup of Pennsylvania politics with two veteran journalists and some good news, bad news about the state of electric cars. 1-888-345-9499. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscone, talking with John Micek and John Baer about a whole host of political issues here in the state of Pennsylvania. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me just pick up on one more thing about the proposed lottery privatization by the governor, John Baer. Now that the attorney general has basically said this is the legislature's responsibility, has the legislature picked up on this issue?
Well, I mean, it's still in flux, Marty, because the governor has indicated he will try again with a new contract. So I think the legislature is kind of hanging back and see what comes from that. I would think that the final straw would be whether or not the legislature wants to get involved in tailoring something that could easily pass. I don't think there's been a lot of conversation about that. Governor's chief counsel office seems to think that they're ready to go forward at some point. They say they're still doing research, still talking to people at Camelot, the British company that's stands in line to get the contract.
And it seems like at issue was whether Keno was part of this deal, which would, I guess, raise questions about the role of the Gaming Control Board, John?
And everything else.
And
I mean,
everything
it raises
else.
All kinds of questions about who has the authority to do what, when, and where. And I mean, all of these issues, Marty, these state issues that we talk about, have so many moving parts. Right. And that's why you see them tied up for months at a time, many times years at a time. Every issue affects so many other different things. And so that's why we never get anything done.
Well, and I do want to pick up on that, John Baer, but talk about an issue that's been on the table for a while, John Micek. This is the privatization of liquor sales in the state of Pennsylvania. I'm sure I've talked with both of you a whole bunch of times about this issue. Again, where does this stand, John Micek?
Enough to drive one to drink, Marty, even at 10:30 in the morning.
Really?
You know, this is an issue that's been kicking
around. Doing it.
What's that? What's that, John Baer?
And text while you're doing it.
You know, please don't.
That's
but
right.
Go ahead, John Micek.
I mean, we're on our. You know, Governor Corbett is now the third governor to take a whack at this, and he's gotten it farther than anybody else has. A bill came out of the House last month, you know, which was unprecedented because it's never happened before. As is so often the case, though, it hit a brick wall in the Senate, which is where the Republican majority is not a fan of privatization. If you ask them about privatization, they start using words like modernization, which is code for keeping the Liquor Control Board and making it act a little bit more like a private business. Senate President Joe Scarnati isn't a big fan. Senator Chuck McElhinney, who's the chairman of the Law and Justice Committee, which has oversight on booze issues, is, you know, sort of calling for a slowdown on this. So much so, in fact, that last week a conservative grassroots group began airing TV ads in suburban Philadelphia, calling on him to pass the bill. I mean, so that's sort of the politics of it is one thing. And then, as John says, there are other moving parts as well, not least of which are concerns from beer distributors and the beer industry on the way they're going to be impacted by this. There's concerns that distributors would be hurt by a privatized system because it would expand beer sales into grocery stores and convenience stores and bodegas and daycare centers, for all I know. No, I'm kidding on that one.
I was going to say, hopefully you're kidding on that one.
No, absolutely. But, I mean, they're concerned about the scope of this and that, you know, this monopoly that they've had for such an awfully long time through the case-only distributorships would be impacted. Mm-hmm. Advocates say, well, these distributors could buy liquor licenses where they could sell wine and beer, wine and spirits. Some of them are saying, well, we don't have the room to do that, or we'd have to give them shelf space for beer. So there's sort of like these intertwined debates now. There's the politics of it, and there's sort of very real fiscal concerns as well that are driving this.
Well, John Baer, I mean, I feel like I've heard all of this before, but is there any middle ground or consensus at least moving forward or perhaps even just finally resolving this issue?
Yeah, I think a sort of clean final resolution is not going to happen. The best, I think, that anybody can hope for is some sort of hybrid compromise that might come later in the year. There are some efforts to tie liquor to transportation. The House, which tends to be more conservative and, as they would say, fiscally responsible, is not interested in voting for anything that looks like a tax, which is going to have to happen if you get money for roads and bridges. And so there may be some behind-the-scenes stuff that say, look, if you give us something on that, we'll give you something on liquor. It's not going to be a sell off all the state stores and go full privatization. If anything happens, it'll probably be some hybrid having to do with a phase out over multiple years, some sort of a license control to ease the concerns of the rural legislators. In other words, nothing easy, nothing fast.
Picking up on this roads and bridges issue, though, John Micek, as we know from various studies, there are thousands of bridges in need of repair, thousands of miles of roads in need of repair as well. Where does that issue stand in Harrisburg?
I mean, this is another sort of perennial debate that we've been having. Governor Tom Corbett, in his February budget address, came out with a five-year, $1.8 billion plan based primarily on uncapping the state's wholesale gasoline tax, which has not been tinkered with since the 80s, I think. That's about $700 million short of the $2.5 billion recommended by the governor's own Transportation Funding Advisory Commission, chaired by PennDOT Secretary Barry Shoke. So about a week or two back, John Rafferty, the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, a Republican from Montgomery County down in your neck of the woods, came out with his funding plan that makes up that difference by boosting license and registration fees. They would expand the renewal periods on licenses from 4 years to 6 years, going from the current $24 to about $50. Registrations would go from 1 year to 4 years, boiling down to about $52 a year or $104 over 4 years. Mm. There would also be surcharges placed on moving violations. So that $250 ticket would get slapped with another $100 or so. You'd end up paying $350 for going, 60 in a 45 zone, just for instance. The governor has said that he doesn't want to pass any tax or fee increases. But the only way you get to the kind of money that's really needed to address the state's backlog of road repairs and bridge repairs, at last count, there's something like 4,000 structurally deficient bridges in the state, the largest such number in the country, and to raise money for mass transit agencies is to do that. Where the governor gets some political cover, I think, though, is that business leaders are saying, tax us. It's fine. We're cool with it. They're positioning this as an economic development issue. They say it costs more for trucks to get stuck in traffic, that it costs, they devour more fuel. And at the end of that, that means higher prices and inconveniences and a lack of competitiveness for consumers and for the state. So that may make that, if there's going to be tax and fee increases signed into law, that makes it a little bit easier for Governor Corbett to do that if he chooses to do so.
Well, do you think, John Baer, Governor Corbett then can use those business people that want spending on bridges and roads as a cover for Grover Norquist, who might be criticizing the governor?
Yeah, look, I think that, this is something that they should have done a year or two ago, because by the time we got to the election, there'd be other issues dominating, and the governor could be out opening projects and saying, here, I brought this county 150 new construction jobs. That time has passed. Now it's going to get into the dicey area of the details of this thing, and one of the details that John Micek referenced is this proposed surcharge on moving traffic violations of no matter what your fine is, you automatically add $100. Wow. All of that money, that $100 surcharge on each ticket, is to be dedicated to mass transit, which in this state means SEPTA. They get the lion's share of mass transit. So then the question becomes, are you going to get rural lawmakers willing to give the speeding ticket money from their constituents who are driving everywhere to people in Philadelphia to ride buses and trains. And that's going to get a little dicey.
And just to underscore what both of our guests were saying, PennDOT has came up with 4,400 bridges and a quarter of the 44,000 miles of roads in this state in need of repair. We are talking Pennsylvania politics with two people who know a lot about Pennsylvania politics. The voice you just heard is John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News based in Harrisburg. John Micek, opinion editor of Penn Live and the Harrisburg Patriot News. And again, we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Obviously, want to hear from our Pennsylvania listeners. John Micek, let me go back to you and talk a bit about Governor Corbett, where he stands, and we should say he's up for re-election next year. Where does he stand among in the polls and, I guess, among Pennsylvanians?
Yeah, it's awfully funny you should bring that up, Marty, because just out this morning is a new Quinnipiac University poll that shows Governor Corbett running behind the three leading Democrats that are now thought to be challenging him by 9 percentage points or more. You know, former Congressman Joe Sestak is up 48% to 34%. U.S. Representative Alison Schwartz up 47-34, and State Treasurer Rob McCord up 44-35. What's telling about that, though, is that not, in addition to the sort of hypothetical head-to-heads, the Democratic candidates all lead among independent voters as well, and that's, you know, a constituency that Republicans traditionally hope to capture. As has been the case for months and months, the governor's numbers are soft among women. They reject him for re-election 54-27%. It's 46-39% among men. Democrats, as you might expect, also do. Republicans embrace him 60-25. And in those head-to-heads, women reject the governor by 18 percentage points. So there are, you know, some serious troubles there going into 2014. And, you know, the governor is going to have to look for some big policy wins, and we've been talking about those, liquor and transportation, so that he has something concrete to run on, and he's just not the guy who cut funding for schools.
Is that part of the problem, John Baer?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem, of course, for all these Democrats is the election's not today. We're still 18 months away. And in the same poll that John Micek is talking about, there is not any Democrat with more than 15% support when you talk about the Democratic primary. So in order to beat somebody, you need somebody. Right now, the Democrats don't have anybody that can get more than 15% of support of their own party. And of the three Democrats that lead Corbett, in today's poll, only one is even announced. So we're a long way from having a resolution on this. There's no question that there hasn't been any good news for Governor Corbett in polling in a long, long time. Everybody keeps waiting to see how and when is he going to turn this thing around. Right. Maybe he never does, but politics is very cyclical. And, you know, I'd remind people that there was polling in 2012 that told Republicans that their nominee for president was going to be Michelle Bachmann. So we're still far out, no question the governor has a lot of work to do. But if I were a Democratic candidate or a Democratic consultant, I wouldn't be measuring for curtains just yet.
But John Baer, do you think for Governor Corbett, is it politics? Is it personalities? Is it policies? What do you think is holding him back?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
It is a combination of all three. This is a guy who was a career-long prosecutor. He clearly does not like or even get politics. He is, by all accounts and from my own experience, a good and decent man and a horrible politician. Just the timing of his policies raised questions about that. The specific projects that he's heavily invested in raise questions about that. And look, he's just not comfortable in the arena. Some people, and you know who he is, Marty, some people like Ed Rendell are born to it. Tom Corbett is not. It's gonna take some major selling and some major progress to get him up to speed in terms of a statewide election. Having said that, we all know that no incumbent governor has ever been defeated since we've allowed the two-term governors dating back to the 70s. And beyond that, in non-presidential years, which Corbett will be running in 2014, in the last 20 gubernatorial elections, only once, 19 out of 20 times, the person who was running in Pennsylvania, whether he was an incumbent or not, was elected opposite the party in the White House. So you're going to have Obama in the White House. History says 96% of the time, Pennsylvania votes for governor for the person of the other party.
Well, that's interesting. John Micek, let me just pick up on a bunch of names. Now, Alison Schwartz is, I guess, the so far declared candidate, a congresswoman representing district in and around here in Philadelphia. But some other names that I saw and ran into, Tom Wolf, a York County businessman, Kathleen McGinty, who was the state environmental secretary, Treasurer Rob McCord, Joe Sestak, you mentioned his name. I also saw John Hanger, Josh Shapiro, Mike Stack, Allentown Mayor Ed Pawlowski. I realize not all of those people are going to run, but it is interesting that a bunch of them are making some noises.
It's like a Broadway touring company.
I mean, is that what it is?
It's getting bigger and bigger. It's getting bigger and bigger all the time. Yeah, I mean, John is absolutely right. I mean, there's 18 months to go to the election. There's a year to the primary, which is like dog years in politics. Any number of things can change. I mean, the one thing that's been troubling is, at least from Governor Corbett's perspective, he's never been able to get above that magical 50% that's always considered sort of the Mendoza line for politicians to win re-election. On the other hand, we are a state as hogtied by history and tradition as any I've ever seen in my entire life. And sort of that weight of political mythology certainly augurs to his advantage. On the other hand, the Democrats look at these soft poll numbers and clearly smell an opportunity. You know, inevitably those ranks are going to would-be candidates and pretenders are going to be thinned because, you know, people are going to find that they can't raise money or that opportunities are being foreclosed to them. And, you know, you'll get down to the real three candidates, and you know, you can put these guys into it's almost like, you know, celebrities. You have A list, B list, and C list, and we could probably spend a whole hour trying to figure out who's where. But you know, it doesn't take much reckoning to figure out what three candidates are sort of in the top tier and who the other also rans might be. But if they look, you know, if I'm a Democratic candidate, I'm looking at these poll numbers, I'm looking at voter perceptions, and you know, the massive Democratic voter registration edge in this state. And, you know, I think I might like my chances.
Well, that's interesting. We're almost up in a break here. But, John Baer, I mean, would you put Alison Schwartz then in the A camp, to use John Micek's words?
Yeah, she sure is. I mean, she's, you know, served in the Senate, in the state Senate, served in the Congress for a long time. The only thing I'd note with Alison is, and this was pointed out by a Democratic consultant, when she got in, most of Washington, and particularly women Washington, and by that I mean Emily's List and others who support women candidates throughout the country, had the view that, well, that's it. She's going to be the nominee. The only problem is, once she announced, then more candidates got in. So at least in Pennsylvania, there's not the perception that she can seal the deal and become the nominee. I think it's going to be a very interesting Democratic primary.
And that's John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, joining us along with John Micek, opinion editor of Penn Live and the Harrisburg Patriot News. Both of them joining us, as we have had them do from time to time, to talk about Pennsylvania politics. And I do want to get some callers in after this very short break. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Questions or comments, give us a call. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Yannick Nezet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra perform Gustav Mahler's Youthful First Symphony. Concerts that also include Korngold's Violin Concerto with virtuoso Hilary Hahn. Tickets at philorc.org or by phone 215-893-1999. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Kimmel Center, Mahler's First with Yannick Nezet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I'm Marty Moscowane. Have you made a pledge of support to WHYY yet? It's the spring membership drive, and as soon as we reach our goal, we will end this campaign. That is our pledge to you. We can only do it if you call 1-888-345-9499 or make a pledge online at WHYY.org. You're listening to Where Your Money Goes to support programs like Radio Times. We bring you regional, national, and international news and analysis and keep you informed about the important issues of the day. We also introduce you to interesting people and ideas. We believe you're the kind of person who wants that kind of programming. So if you've never made a pledge or you have let your membership lapse, now is the time to take that next step and become a listener supporter. You'll be happy you did. Here's that phone number again. It's 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. Again, you'll be very glad you did. Thanks so much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking about Pennsylvania politics with our guest John Baer and John Micek, and again taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Much more to discuss, but first let me get Linda from Downingtown to join us on Radio Times. And Linda, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just had a quick question for the panelists. Why doesn't the governor think of something like raising the cigarette taxes as a way of funding some of these DOT projects? The surcharges, to me, as a former New Yorker, is just what New York did in order to compensate for their revenue shortcomings, and it became so obnoxious that it was one of the biggest complaints from anybody who lived in New York. So I was just curious why something like the cigarette tax wouldn't be put on the table, even though I understand he pledged no new taxes.
Well, that might be part of the problem or the issue for him. John Micek, let me toss that first to you.
She just answered her own question. Governor Ed Rendell tried to boost cigarette taxes under his tenure, and that was a kick-scrap fight every inch of the way. He ended up getting, I think, like $1 a pack by the end of his tenure. But, you know, it's just not part of the discussion right now, and it just seems sort of inconceivable for Governor Corbett to suddenly throw a cigarette tax hike on the table. It's just not part of his DNA, and it's not something that anybody's really even considering or talking about.
And John Baer, I wonder if there are enough smokers in the state left to support something like that.
Well, and that's the other part of the problem. What you need here are billions, not millions. And remember, the bulk of the highway funding money would come from the oil company franchise tax by lifting the cap on that. That's a fuels tax that's paid by gas stations. And they almost certainly will pass it along to consumers, and then the governor will try to tell everybody that, well, it's not a tax, it's really a user fee that the gas stations are to blame for. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with John Micek. It's not on the table. It hasn't been discussed, and it wouldn't produce enough revenue to balance off the heat you would take for imposing it.
Linda, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And again, you can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let's talk about this grand jury indictment of 8 Pennsylvania Turnpike commissioners or members of the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission. And I'll toss this back to you, John Micek, and then John Baer, I'd like to have you weigh in as well. What did the grand jury, charge?
Okay, yeah, you're right. It's eight people formerly associated with the Turnpike, including the former Senate Minority Leader Bob Mello, the former CEO Joe Brinmeier, and the chairman Mitchell Rubin. Basically, that they were using vendor contracts, paying to play, using them for political contributions, and to get a contract, you had to donate to political campaigns. I mean, the ironic thing about Mr. Rubin is that he'd already been caught up in the Vince Fumo federal corruption trial. Senator Mello had already been already convicted on a federal corruption count, so it made a bad year worse for at least two of them. And it seems like once you know this grand jury report is just the gift that keeps on giving. Once you get once you think you've read everything in it, you go back in and there's more details about how endemic and systemic this was within the agency.
Well, and we're talking, John Baer, about allegations or charges of conspiracy, theft, conflict of interest, and the sort of heart and soul, meat and potatoes of pay to play.
the whole kitchen sink. I had always taken the position, Marty, that the turnpike was probably the best road in the state. As long as they kept it plowed, I didn't care what they did over there. But this sort of puts it in perspective. I mean, we're talking about the loss, Kathleen Kane said, of untold millions in public funds because there was, contracts were rigged and people were getting kickbacks and money was going to politicians and gifts were going to members, to officials at the turnpike. And this was one of those things that was everybody close to Pennsylvania politics knew was going on. I don't think anybody knew the extent to which it went on, because that agency, that commission, has always been sort of a resting place for the favorites of people who get elected into office, and you don't do that for nothing. I mean, you want to get something out of that long term. So it was, again, part of Pennsylvania tradition and heritage, and so long as people, the tolls were reasonable and the roads were plowed, but most people didn't really care.
But what was the spark that started this investigation by the grand jury, John Bair?
Well, this started years ago. It was basically well underway when Tom Corbett was the attorney general. I mean, I'm sure it started at about that time. Kathleen Kane came in near the tail end of it. It was about ready to go, and to her credit, didn't slow it up, didn't kind of scrub any Democratic stuff out of there, went ahead. But it was a long time coming, and a lot of people knew it was going on. It had been rumored to be near its conclusion for months, if not years.
Are people quaking in their boots, John Micek in Harrisburg, because of this grand jury?
It's funny. These grand juries come along, and there's always these sort of come-to-Jesus moments, and people swear this is now the time to clean up government, and by God, we have to have reform. And you see that now with a bill that would fold the Turnpike Commission into PennDOT. And then, you know, everyone sort of calms down, they have a good cry, and they go back. And then it seems like two or three years later, here we are with another corruption scandal of one kind or another. So they might be quaking now, but, you know, whether or not that's going to lead to sort of the reform that everyone thinks it's going to lead to from these things remains to be seen.
And in this indictment, John Micek, Fumo's name came up. He was Senator number 6.
That's right. That's always the most fun when you read these things. You know, the governor number 1 who was elected in 2003. Who might that be? Or senator number 6. And you start waiting. Then the speculation begins. Okay, when does the other shoe drop for these unnamed folk as well? Not that it's going to, but it's, you know, that's always the best part about reading these grand jury documents.
John Bair, did you want to add to that? I heard you chuckle.
Well, the only thing I wanted to add is after we did this press conference in which all this was announced, and we were told by the state police commissioner and by the attorney general that the investigation was ongoing, I proposed we change the license plate slogans to Pennsylvania, the land of the ongoing investigation.
That sounds very John Bair to me, I have to say. And that is John Bair, who joined us along with John Micek. And we're laughing, I guess, to keep from crying, talking about some Pennsylvania political issues here, trying to keep us all up to speed on what's going, what is happening in this state. And sometimes living here in the Philadelphia area, you don't necessarily know what's going on in the rest of the state, which is why we call them up from time to time to check in. And we do take phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. John Bair, let me toss this to you, and this is, I know, one of your favorite issues. Turns out that the cost of the legislature, I guess last year, so in 2011, was up about $8 million to $307 million. And I know this is one of your favorite issues. I'm going to just give you the microphone. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, as John Micek said, we have these crises of confidence in government, as we did in the bonus gate stuff, and everybody says, oh, we're going to, you know, when all these lawmakers went to jail. We currently, there can't be another state in the nation with our record. We currently have 8 former legislative leaders in prison simultaneously. And part of the problem was the availability of tax dollars to use any way they wanted, which they did. And so here we are just a few years past that, and we find out that an internal audit shows that the price of the legislature, the largest full-time legislature in America, has gone up to over $300 million a year, gone up between $7 and $8 million, according to an audit for which taxpayers pay $185,000, which is not a performance audit. It is just simply an accounting of where the money is and how much of it is. And, you know, that'll come and go. It's a one-day story. Everybody will say, oh, you know, well, 300, 307, what's the difference? But the point is, as Micek correctly said, we just sort of see this stuff, we get through it, we shrug, and then we move on to something else.
Well, and just to underscore that, John Micek, there are 203 elected members of the legislature in Harrisburg and about 3,000 staffers. I read the payroll and benefits comes to about $249 million.
Yeah, it's a hugely expensive undertaking. 203 in the House and 50 in the Senate. And you know, the other thing that came out of this audit that was released last week is that the legislature is sitting on $141 million in surplus, just sitting on it that they're not going to use. The argument is, and we editorialized on this in fact last week, that they need this in the event of a budget stalemate so that they can remain autonomous and keep paying everybody and yada, yada, yada. But $141 million in a time of government austerity, when we're seeing cuts in public welfare programs and we're seeing cuts in public schools, the tone deafness is a little staggering. I mean, to their credit, they have given some of this money back. It's $40 million smaller than it was, and it's smaller than the 200-some-odd million it was a few years back. But you know, they're sitting on, again, it's $141 million that legislative leaders can spend however they like with no oversight whatsoever. And it just, it goes to sort
of
Marty, and the alternate universe that they're living in.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, John Baer. Go ahead.
It's important that people understand John's numbers are right, his facts are right. It's important people understand this is not a state rainy day fund. This is not something where our tax dollars are put away for use in case of emergencies or disasters.
Right.
This is money, $141 million, strictly controlled by legislative leaders for any purpose they want, dinners, banquets, anything they want to do. It isn't out there solving problems. It isn't going to the local boys club. It's for their personal use.
Well, and that raises questions about whether John Micek, the public, knows about this and whether they care about it.
We certainly try to write about it, and we certainly try to incite the public. But yeah, I mean, the money is there, and this is—I mean, John's absolutely correct. This is not a rainy day fund to hedge against future budget deficits. This is a fund controlled exclusively by the 250, controlled exclusively by the General Assembly, with no public accountability whatever.
And I'm just kind of pausing there just to digest what it is that you said.
And are you shaking your head?
I think I actually was breathless. I ran out of words on the air. But back to you, John Baer. I mean, I guess it could be used to pay for needed programs and services. I mean, could it possibly be returned to the taxpayers in the state?
God forbid. But, yeah, of course it could and should. But, you know, it's Pennsylvania.
I mean, you think it's Pennsylvania because that's the way it's always been done here in John Baer?
That's the way we do it, Marty. Money for nothing and chicks for free.
I didn't know about the chicks for free part. Let me reintroduce the two of you. And we are talking about Pennsylvania politics, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I've resisted saying we're talking to two Johns today in the hour, but we are John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, and John Micek, who is the opinion editor of Penn Live and also the Harrisburg Patriot News. And I'm Marty Moscowain, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. John Baer, let me go back to you because you had a piece today in the Philadelphia Daily News about reform. The headline says government reform in Pennsylvania, slowly we turn. You do, though, write about the fact that there's some bills that would make lobbyists electronically register and report expenditures, publicly posting them online within a week. Where do those bills stand?
Well, they have passed the Senate, and the Senate deserves some props for that because, I mean, these are things that, you know, should have been done, could have been done a decade ago, and were done in most other states a decade ago. We are now catching up. It is unbelievable to me that only about a third of the people who file campaign finance reports do so electronically. I mean, it's like we're living in the 1940s in this state. This bill would kind of put an end to that and require electronic filing. We require candidates and PACs, political action committees that raise more than $10,000 to report it more often so that, you know, voila, people could actually see who's funding candidates before they're elected. I mean, what a concept. But again, these have only passed the Senate. They go to the House where, as I pointed out in today's column, which, by the way, Marty, is also available at the brand new shiny website, PhillyDailyNews.com. As John Bicek points out, what happens when these disastrous things like the Turnpike thing, I mean, a young representative from Washington County stood up in the House 2 weeks ago, introduced an amendment to a bill that would say, look, if you're getting a state contract, we want to see who you've given political contributions to for 2 years. Makes perfect sense, is a good answer to pay to play. So the Republican-controlled House immediately voted it down. So who knows what's going to happen to these good reform bills that the Senate has now passed over to the House.
And just a quote in your piece, you asked Brandon Newman what happened, and he said, to be honest, I have no idea.
Yeah. And to which I said, hello, Newman, it's Pennsylvania.
John Micek, I'm giving you the last word here. I guess looking ahead, and we haven't really talked about the budget, but I guess is that going to consume Harrisburg for the next 6 weeks or so?
Oh, that old thing.
Exactly.
There's a June 30th deadline to pass the budget. If you ask Governor Corbett, and even if you don't, he'll tell you how great it is that he's passed two on-time budgets and wants to make a third one, and they're balanced. He gets credit for the former, but not the latter. State law requires balanced budgets, so that's just showing up for work. And to go to John's point, I have long also had a proposed revision to the state's license plates that it should be, welcome to Pennsylvania, we fear change.
Oh, dear, we fear change. Well, you know what? We could go on. We'll call you back in a couple of months and kind of see how things played out. John Baer, John Micek, thank you both so much for joining us today in Radio Times. I always learn a lot.
Thank you, Marty.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. John Micek, opinion editor of Penn Live and the Harrisburg Patriot News. John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. Do stay with us for the second hour. We'll be right back.